Hello, this is More to the Point Radio, and this is Russell Moore, President of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And I'm coming to you today as somebody who is previously one half of an infertile couple. I say that as somebody who drove to my new office in a minivan filled with five children. But for a long time, my wife and I were told, you'll never have children, you'll never be able to have children. And we walked through that time of heartbreak and of hopelessness that so many people go through when they're told similar things. And so sometimes we look at all kinds of alternatives to infertility and say, let's do any of them, anything that can help families have children. One of the ways that modern science is offering to fix infertility for families who want children is through surrogacy. Someone who bears a child for another couple and gives birth to that child. And there are some people right now in the United States, especially in the state of Louisiana, who are offering legislation, passed legislation, that would make surrogacy easier in that state. And at first glance, that seems to be a very compassionate thing. Who could not be for this? It's free market at work. People are able to make their own decisions, make their own choices. You have children who are being born and children welcomed into families. So what could possibly be the problem with surrogacy? Well, I think there's a big problem with surrogacy, and I think there's a big problem with bills such as the one in Louisiana, and it's kind of heartbreaking to watch this going on. And that's why I wanted to talk today with Jennifer Lull, who is someone that I have so much respect for as an ethicist, as a public intellectual on all sorts of issues of bioethics, including the issue of surrogacy. She is the founder and president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network. She's been a pediatric critical care nurse, hospital administrator. She's written for all sorts of publications. And she's also a filmmaker. She has several movies that have been very influential in American culture. The first one that I ever heard about was a documentary film called Exploitation. And the reason that I found this film interesting is because Jennifer was working not only with conservative Christians who are worried about issues of bioethics and human trafficking and other things, but also with feminist groups, National Organization for Women chapters and others, also who are concerned about women being used as commodities with this film. And that's kind of the first time that I ever started following Jennifer's work and have really benefited from it since then. She has another great documentary called Anonymous Father's Day, dealing with questions of sperm donation. And I just like the fact that Jennifer is addressing winsomely and holistically questions before they become commonplace questions. But keep in mind, this issue will hit home to you in your neighborhood, in your community, in your church, in your extended family. And we need to be able to ask, how should we think about this as the people who follow Christ? Jennifer Lull, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your first day at your new job, too. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to talk to you. You know, right now, in the state of Louisiana, there's a question going on about surrogacy. Can you just help our listeners understand what really happens with surrogacy? What is this controversy about?
Well, the controversy is about, you know, asking, employing, oftentimes with money, another woman to carry a child for sometimes an infertile couple. I live in California, where Elton John and his partner came to California to use a surrogate in order for a same-sex couple, Elton John and his partner, to conceive. But it predominantly started out as often seen as good to help a couple who, often the woman is having trouble conceiving and carrying a pregnancy to term, so they will employ a surrogate. That's what's happening in Louisiana right now. It's a law that's passed the House and the Senate that allows these gestational contract pregnancies to go forward and for women to be compensated financially in order to do this. And it's all under the gloss of this is a great, wonderful thing. Who could be against this? Which puts us in an awkward position because we're actually, you know, in discussions with people who share our perspective on Christian faith or share our pro-life sensibilities.
Yeah.
And who have sort of been swept into thinking that this is good, and why should I be against this bill?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This isn't California. This is Louisiana, which is probably one of the most pro-life, pro-family states in the union when it comes to legislation. So why do you think people would vote for this? I mean, what is the motivation that would say this is a good thing?
Well, the motivation is, in this particular case in Louisiana, it's a beloved senator, and it's a story of he and his wife who weren't able to conceive and went to California and hired a gestational surrogate to carry their children. So a lot of his colleagues are sympathetic to their plight, and they see what he and his wife did as a good thing. I think part of the problem, too, in a conservative pro-life state like Louisiana is that we don't think how to think Christianly about these modern-day technologies. Mm-hmm. I often lament, when was the last time you heard a sermon preached on the barren womb?
Mm-hmm.
And the barren womb and infertility in light of 21st century modern technologies? So oftentimes we have good people of goodwill who desperately want to have children who are told by their physician to go to the fertility doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't stop and say, what does it mean to knit me together in my mother's womb? You know, what does it mean to be fruitful and to multiply when I can't and I have all these technologies that are a cafeteria menu to pick and choose from? And so we haven't done our homework, if you will, to be, you know, sort of charitable and really helping people think Christianly who have a Christian worldview. And what does it mean to be a barren woman or a barren man?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, men can have infertility as well.
That is a really good point. I want to come back to that in just a minute. But before we do, this lands on Governor Jindal's desk, Governor Bobby Jindal. What would you say to Governor Jindal about how he ought to think about what to do with this bill?
Well, I would say to him, I would say, please, Governor Jindal, wait and please veto this bill. I think that's going to be a real hard political thing for him to do, just as a pure political act, because it has passed with such overwhelming support from the House and the Senate. And so it's difficult for a governor who's got, you know, many of his colleagues that he works with and respects,
mm-hmm.
encouraging him to vote against the bill or to veto a bill. I would ask him, to think long and hard about the children. Often what we hear is the plight of the couple who desperately wants a child. I was a pediatric nurse. She said that in just introducing me. And I'm overwhelmed with how hard we work to bond mothers and babies together in the womb,
mm-hmm.
And to keep babies in their mother's womb for so long because they have been fearfully and wonderfully made and knit together in their mother's womb. And there's something quite wonderful and intentional about bearing children and that whole mother and child bond. And that these technologies intentionally tell a woman, do not bond with this child.
Mm.
What happens to little children in the home when they see a mother having babies and giving them away?
Mm.
Because the bill in Louisiana says that the gestational surrogate must already be a mom. So that means there's going to be little children that are in a home that sees, well, mommy keeps some of her babies, and mommy gives some of her babies away to nice people who can't have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do to our family structures? What does it do to the husband and wife intimacy when you're laying in bed with your husband and you're carrying somebody else's child in your womb? So we have to think deeply about these things, and we just gloss over it because somebody can't have a baby, and we have technology that can help. And how can we stop Governor Jindal and think deeply about changing such a dramatic way in which families are made and children are conceived? And this isn't something we just do lightly with a wave of a signing a bill.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, this is we live in a culture that tends to be kind of neatly divided down culture war lines these days. But this is one of those issues where sometimes conservative Christians and feminist groups have something in common when it comes to what surrogacy does to women. What would you say about how this treats women?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that it's been such a blessing to be able to work with feminists on, you know, the left, the political left, the pro-choice feminist group, is that they understand because of the money incentive, because of the commercial aspect of this, it's always going to be, you know, people that have means, I can buy, I can pay, versus women who don't have means, who need money so that they can perhaps stay at home with little children that they want to be at home with, and this provides a financial incentive.
Mm-hmm.
The risk, I mean, back to putting on my nursing hat, I mean, it takes a lot of maneuvering and a lot of drugs and a lot of procedures to prepare a gestational surrogate mother's womb in order to conceive an embryo from a child that's not hers, it's not naturally conceived. So there's a lot of health risks, and there's a lot of there's not been a lot of study done or tracking on the long-term effects of these drugs on the children that are produced from them, and also the surrogate who's going to ingest a lot of these drugs in order to prepare her womb to have a baby. So that makes for really strange conversations, because the women on the left are very concerned about vulnerable poor women.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really well known that a lot of the surrogates in America are military wives.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see the ads predominantly targeting military wives.
Why is that the case?
Well, their husbands are deployed. They tend to be low income. They tend to marry young and have children young. It's a great way they see in their mind they're helping, they're doing a good service. You know, military families are already committed to serving one another, serving, you know, the country. And they see it as a wonderful way to make a good amount of money. I mean, a gestational surrogate can make $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 and stay at home with their children while their husband's in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's seen as a win-win. What could be wrong?
You know, Wesley Smith at National Review wrote an article calling Louisiana our India of surrogacy, and really dealt with the question of human trafficking, of treating people as objects and children as objects to be purchased. That's some pretty strong language.
Well, it's actually what happens. I mean, if you read an actual contract that's written and you see what's happening in India and you see what's happening here in the America, I mean, India's number one in leading the globe on paid contract surrogacy pregnancies. You know, the United States is number two. And if you read these contracts, it's a transaction. You know, the surrogate is not paid if she doesn't produce a baby at the end. You know, the women in India are literally housed in, like, dormitories. They have to leave their communities. They leave their villages. They leave their families. It's taboo. It's considered selling your motherhood. You don't go, if you're a woman in India, you don't go home to your family and say, guess what I'm going to do.
Mm.
It's considered shameful. So it's really quite disgusting, if you will. And it really grieves my heart when I see women in the church who have done this or who said, I would do this for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it as, you know, how can I help, you know, the commandment to be fruitful and multiply. And this technology is God's gift to us to help people to be fruitful and to multiply.
You know, Jennifer, I think you were exactly right when you talked a few minutes ago about the fact that our churches, although we're pro-life and we speak about the life issue as it relates to abortion, I think our churches aren't ready sometimes to deal with where the life issue is happening at the technological level all around them. And we're kind of sometimes behind the times when it comes to these questions. I remember when my wife and I were grappling with infertility, the only people we really had to talk to about it were other infertile couples and doctors. And what doctors are often wanting to do in our culture right now is to sell a fix that sometimes has a very, very high ethical cost to it. And when you're vulnerable and when you're in a desperate situation, you're sometimes willing to negotiate away your ethics in order to meet the longing that you have. And I think we really have to have congregations where pastors and leaders are talking about these issues explicitly. These are the sorts of temptations that you're going to face, and here's the way that we can bear up one another's burdens and hold one another accountable on these things.
Yes, and I actually spoke with a gentleman once who confided in me, his wife, their struggle with infertility, and he went to his pastor and he said, you know, what should we do? And his pastor sort of said, I have five children. I don't know anything about infertility. I don't know what to tell you.
Mm.
And I think that shows a real missing gap, too, in just our seminary training in preparing pastors before they go out, especially if they're going to have discipleship or pulpit ministries or whatever, so that they are prepared not to turn their, you know, their pulpits into IVF bully pulpits or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But Sanctity of Life Sunday has to be more than just we talk about abortion and crisis pregnancy centers. And we have to, you know, we have to talk about infertility because it is in the Bible. We have permission to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do when God doesn't open the womb or closes the womb? And how are we to respond? And when are our hands clean and our hearts are pure? What can I do when the fertility doctor gives me 15 options? Which ones are still honoring of my faith and my desire to be obedient to God, and which ones are not, ones that are problematic.
I think you just hit on a very key reason why a lot of pastors and preachers and teachers don't address this issue, is because they think, well, I'm not an expert because I've never been through infertility. But in reality, what God has called us to do is to equip the saints, to admonish one another. None of us have died before, and yet we're able to help people to prepare to meet God and to go through the process of death. And so we ought to be able to encourage one another in all of the different situations of life with a word from God.
Absolutely. And know that when we read the creation account in Genesis, that everything was good and wonderful, and there were no children in the garden. And so that we don't have to make our couples struggling with infertility in our churches or in our communities feel less than complete. I mean, you are a fully complete married couple. Mm-hmm. If you cannot have children, there's nothing you've done wrong. There's nobody to blame. There's no guilt. There's no special group you need to be a part of. And we have this notion that, like you said earlier, there's something broken. And sure, there's a lot of things broken because of the fall. But you're still a complete husband and wife. And I know many, many couples who chose not to go down the infertility route with their doctors, and God has blessed their marriages and their ministries as husbands and wives.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word. Well, Jennifer, I really appreciate your being with me today on the program, and let's pray and hope that Governor Jindal vetoes this bill. But beyond that, let's pray and hope that we really have an attentive and discerning eye to know that there are some things that just aren't for sale, and that includes the blessing of children and women's fertility and those things. These aren't commodities to be bartered back and forth on the market. Thank you, Jennifer Law, so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Russell Moore, and this has been More to the Point Radio, and we will be back next time to talk about ethics, religious liberty, and the issues that matter.